Today on Wings, a feminist reporter visits a men's issues conference in London, England. She interviews a Canadian woman who is billed there as the most famous anti-feminist in the world.
What's it like being a woman within the men's rights movement?
It's excellent. It's excellent. It's awesome to be part of this movement.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. Laura White is a reporter and award-winning documentary and news producer who focuses on issues of youth, extremism, and women's rights. Originally from Belfast in Northern Ireland, Laura is based in London, England. She is the special projects editor of Open Democracy's 50-50 Project, where she works with feminist investigative journalism fellows and tracks the backlash against sexual and reproductive rights. She hosts this podcast, Episode 4 of the series Backlash.
Hello and welcome to The Backlash, a podcast series tracking threats against women's and LGBT rights, brought to you by 50-50, the gender and sexuality section of Open Democracy. I'm Lara White and I'm your host. In July, 50-50 spent a weekend attending the International Conference on Men's Issues in London, where men's rights activists in 24 different countries gathered to discuss the evils of feminism and what can be done about it. Concepts like mansplaining, manspreading, rape culture on campuses were all used as examples of how feminism and women's rights have supposedly gone too far. When we talk about the backlash against feminism or women's rights, men's rights activists, or MRAs as they call themselves, are a movement that we think needs serious and critical attention. I wrote a dispatch on the conference for 50-50 and promptly received torrents of abuse as the conference organizer emailed all attendees urging them to troll me in the comments section of our website. There's been some extreme cherry picking of the article and claims of misrepresentation, as I wrote, when I walked into the room before the conference began, I was briefly the only woman in a room full of white men. It was worth mentioning because it was the first thing I noticed as I entered, and it was quite intimidating. I did not say there were no women in the movement. There are. And at the conference, there were a tiny handful of non-white attendees, including a speaker from the Indian men's rights movement. At the conference, I spoke to a woman called Karen Strawn, who I really tried to understand in a lengthy interview where she talked about women's privilege and why she's never identified as a feminist herself. Karen is a revered figure within the movement and is loved for being, quote, the most famous anti-feminist in the world. Before we go into that interview, here's a man called Alistair from the British anti-feminist political party Justice for Men and Boys, which organised the conference. This is a description of feminists and feminism that he gave to Open Democracy's Adam Behavsky, who was at the conference for 50-50.
There's no pleasing them, there's no making deals with them. They are ideological terrorists. Ideological terrorists. They're obsessed with their ideology, and regardless of what they say, they will attack you and resort to criminal and terrorist activities. Bomb threats, violence, disrupting peaceful meetings, and of course, just lies and slander.
And have you experienced that yourself? Or?
Personally, no, but I've seen various cases. For example, just look at the famous case of Big Red attacking the cafe meeting and then screaming that feminists don't hate men, we just hate patriarchy, and using various expletives. So there's been case after case of feminists and feminist-aligned institutions attacking peaceful people just gathering to talk about their problems because they want to control the narrative. They are offended by men talking without women, sorry, not without women supervising, without feminists supervising. Feminism is an evil ideology, and I want it to be equated with, say, the Westboro Baptist Church. Other feminist organisations, I'd rather have them classed as con groups. They're not charities, they're massive cons. But they don't directly dirty the hands of terrorists, they just lie about statistics to grab money. So that's not terrorism, it's just con artistry. like, women, this women's aid and things. They lie about statistics to get money, playing in people's sympathies. So they're just con artists.
So that's what we're dealing with there. Karen Strawn is a Canadian anti-feminist who's been writing and video blogging on gender issues since 2010. She has almost 200,000 subscribers on YouTube, which from the MRAs I spoke to at the conference seems to be a vital platform for this movement. Karen opened the conference with her keynote address, which was called Why Women Must Consign Feminism to the Dustbin of History. We spoke for about 40 minutes and covered a lot of topics. She's a charismatic and incredibly engaging woman, and so her activism on men's rights seems to add a certain legitimacy to this movement, which is why I wanted to talk to her to try and dig down into why she does what she does and what motivates her. In Karen's keynote address, she spoke about why she would give up her right to vote if it led to men and women having equality. And remember, she thinks that women have more privileges than men. So I start here by asking her why she would possibly give up her right to vote.
I would if I felt like that was something that I had to do in order to make things more fair or redress an imbalance, I would certainly do that. That doesn't mean that I want to or that I would choose to do so for no reason whatsoever. So
what is the reason then?
Well, you know, when women got the vote, when men got the vote, they got the vote largely in the U.S., they got the vote because their voting rights and their citizenship rights were tied to conscription. And when women got the vote and full citizenship rights, they didn't have any similar obligation placed on them. Women got the rights, got all the same rights. They didn't get any of the obligations to the state. So I think that that's not fair. Personally, I would rather women be made to register in the Selective Service in the U.S. I think they should be held more accountable as citizens and have similar obligations to men. People say there's no draft in Canada, but that's just one act of Parliament away from happening if it's ever necessary, right? So, and if women aren't included in that draft, then I don't know that they deserve their vote.
So what about the obligations on women to continue the population?
There are no obligations on women to do that. Would you...
But there, without those bodies, none of us would be here.
True. What we have is this idea that women have an obligation, in quotation marks, to give birth when women have no such obligation, and they haven't for at least 50 years.
And so you think that that's a privilege, so women have more privileges than men. Is that correct, or am I putting words into your mouth there?
I think that women definitely have more privileges than men, because a privilege is something that you get for nothing, right?
So what are those privileges?
Well, if men got the vote because they're draftable, and women got the vote for nothing, that's a privilege.
But you don't think everybody should have the vote?
I think everybody should have the vote too. I just don't think that only men should be drafted. And I think that the way we frame it now is all of these horrible men kept the vote away from women for no good reason whatsoever, when in reality the majority of women didn't want the vote and essentially fought against getting the vote, some of them because they were worried that they would be drafted and they didn't want that. Right?
But fundamentally, you do agree with the principle that women should be able to vote, yeah?
I think that every adult should be able to vote, for sure.
So when you say, I would give up my vote, you're kind of just being provocative.
Not really, because I would. I would. I absolutely would.
On Wings, you're listening to an interview with Karen Strawn, perhaps the most prominent woman in the men's rights movement. As you just heard, Strawn traces men's right to vote in the U.S. to conscription. But the sources we found trace it to landholding and taxation, both in England and the U.S. Strawn is Canadian, so she might be thinking of the Canada Wartime Elections Act of 1917, which extended suffrage to female relatives of Canadian soldiers serving overseas. Again, here's the interviewer, Lara White of Open Democracy.
You're Canadian?
Yes.
There's a lot of Canadian women in this movement.
Mm-hmm.
What's that about?
I don't know. Cabin fever? I have no idea why that is. We're a little bit weird, I guess.
And what did draw you to the movement? And I'm trying to avoid the why are you here question, but if you could just kind of Take me through the steps. Like, did you identify as a feminist?
No.
Never?
Never.
But some of the arguments that the men's rights movement put forward, to me as an outsider, do seem to be in line with some of the feminist goals.
Yes.
So...
it's not about the goals, okay? It's not about the stated goals. Feminism isn't just a prescription, right? It's a description as well, right? So it not only says, here's what we want society to look like in the future, it also describes what they feel society actually looks like right now. That's a diagnosis, right? And so they're essentially saying, here's the disease, here's the mechanism as to how it operates, and here is what we need to prescribe in order to get to a healthy body. And I think that they have the entire paradigm of disease wrong, the entire model and conceptualization of the disease wrong.
What has feminism got so wrong?
That society is a patriarchy where men oppress women for their own benefit. Who is raising these men who allegedly created a society that hates women? And how can you actually look at the men around you, you know, that you care about, and say that you and people like you constructed a society based entirely on oppressing the people with whom you form the most intimate personal relationships with from the moment you are born, oppressing them for your own benefit? What kind of psychopath would a man have to be to decide that this is how I want society to operate, that I want to oppress these women for my own benefit?
But did they not just inherit this society where they had a privileged position, so therefore they're unwilling to give it up?
I wouldn't call it a privileged position at all.
Why not?
Why not? Well, okay, you know, you ever spent any time being shelled in a trench?
No, thankfully not.
There you go. Well, you know, that was just something that meant all it took was social pressure from young women. There was a story I read on...
Was that about governments that needed to win territory and utilizing both men and women to do that?
Yeah, they utilized women to manipulate men into giving their lives, right? And why would men give their lives at the behest of women if they were interested in oppressing women?
Your talk was all about how, like, women need to demolish feminism.
I think you need to appeal to their basic sense of fairness. I think women do have a sense of fairness when it's sort of really presented to them in bald terms. So many of the women who have come into sort of the men's movement or the non-feminist and anti-feminist activated sectors of society, it's because they had sons and they saw how their sons were treated at school, or they saw how their sons were treated by the system. They don't want to dope their kid up with Ritalin just because the teacher doesn't like his boy behavior. Things like that.
Within every newsroom that I've worked in, mm-hmm. I've experienced a man on my level earning more. Have you never experienced any kind of sexism within your work that has made you think, oh, something's not really right here? Never?
Not in terms of pay, no.
So you've never been a victim of sexism?
Sure I have.
Okay.
Not in terms of pay. And I, you know, frankly, you know, as far as pay goes, it wouldn't really, you know, 50 cents an hour doesn't bother me. I've always been a minimum wage worker, right, up until I started doing this. So it just, like, that's just arguing over pennies.
It's value.
Okay, you know, you have a right to be angry about that, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's systemic across society. It may just be in places where you've worked or in a particular industry. You know, I could tell you that female runway models make 10 to 100 times more than male runway models.
And male footballers make 10 to 100 times more than female footballers.
That's right, there you go. And there's not necessarily any injustice there because female runway models bring in more money for the client, right? And so do male footballers bring in more money for the league. So essentially what you're looking at is, you know, some of these things are systemic issues, maybe. You can't assume that all of it is sexism. And you don't necessarily have to assume that any of it is sexism, because some of it can be explained just by personal preference on the part of women.
On Wings, this is men's rights activist Karen Strawn, interviewed by Lara White of Open Democracy. The Red Pill, mentioned next, is a 2016 documentary about the men's rights movement.
So you were featured in The Red Pill. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that really struck me in that film was that there was a discussion about, you know, a loss of status for men, a kind of a loss of income, a loss of place, and that women were kind of blamed directly for that. But at no point was there any discussion of capitalism. The economic realities of our time are that a few people are incredibly rich and everybody else is getting poorer. The film really didn't go into that. And the men's rights movement, from my limited so far experience of it, does not seem to be, it seems to just be anti-women. It doesn't seem to be anti the other contributing factors that have led men to this space where they feel like they're not being taken seriously, where their pain isn't being heard.
Okay, here's the thing, right? It hasn't really mattered what system we've been operating under. Men's pain has not been heard. So communism, you know, men's pain was not heard. Capitalism, men's pain is not heard. Socialism, men's pain is not heard. Men's pain is not heard. It doesn't really matter what economic system we're working under. These are deep psychological, social psychology problems, right, that are intrinsic to us as human beings. They are not some kind of byproduct of whatever economic system we're using. They're endemic to all of them.
But it feels like feminism and women's rights are being blamed for the conditions of where we are at the moment. And feminists would be advocating for some of the same things here. You know, women, men's pain should be heard. They shouldn't have to be strong. Boys should be able to cry.
I know, and it seems very surprising then that when men's rights activists talk about their feelings, the male tears coffee mugs come out on Twitter. You know, from feminists, from the very feminists who say, we want you to talk about how you really feel. Right? When men talk about that, then they get wah, wah, man, baby, beard, tears. Sorry, I hurt your man feels.
But is that not more about the corporate capture of feminism, how capitalism is just making feminism?
Oh, no. Feminism has always been just absolutely rotten, right from the Declaration of Sentiments, probably before. It's just absolutely rotten. It's had a streak of man-hating a mile wide running right through the middle of it. And go read the Declaration of Sentiments. Read it with an uncharitable eye, okay? And look at it as the list of grievances. Men have been horrible to women, end of story, period.
So
forever.
But is the men's rights movement not doing kind of the same thing by blaming women?
And so we don't blame women.
Second part of that question is, what's it like being a woman within the men's rights movement? Like,
it's excellent. It's excellent. It's awesome to be part of this movement. One of the things that always struck me is, you know, because I come to a lot of these things and I have never, ever, ever in any way felt uneasy or unsafe. There's some wacky guys here sometimes, right, at these things. They're a little socially awkward, they're a little goofy, for sure. But I've never felt in any way endangered while I've been here. But, you know, there was this male feminist I did an interview with. And I did a interview with him, a sort of conversation with him online a while back, maybe a year and a half ago. He seemed desperate to jam me back into a female victim box. He seemed absolutely desperate to essentially say what you've said to me here, some of the things that you've said to me here. You know, don't you feel you've been victimized by sexism? Don't you feel you've been treated unfairly? But, well, of course I have. Everybody has. But he just seemed determined to cram me back into this box of female victimhood where he could, I don't know, be my rescuer and the rescuer of all women. And then, like, 8 months later, he shot his girlfriend to death. So, you know, and this is...
He's the worst feminist. He's not a feminist. If he shot his girlfriend, he's not a feminist.
But okay... But what is feminism other than wanting to keep women in a box where they concentrate constantly on their victimhood? What I get out of the men's rights movement is I get the feeling that I can serve, right? That I can serve, that I have something to offer people who are not like me, that I have something to give to society, that I have something unique, something valuable, right? That I have an obligation and a responsibility to pick that up and carry it forward, not for my own benefit, but for the benefit of others. That is a massively huge feeling. Feminism, all it ever told me was, you know, poor you. And that's just not who I am.
And so do you get abuse from people online? Like,
no. I get the odd bit from feminists. You know, the odd feminist will be like, you know, you're a traitor to your gender or whatever. You just want male attention. Or I just ignore it. Every once in a while, someone will put an actual argument rather than a slur. And I'll get involved in the conversation, but generally I keep things pretty genial. But 99% of the feedback I get is positive, so.
What do you think is the biggest myth about the men's rights movement that you would like to bust? Like, what's the kind of...
That we hate women. Like, that's the biggest myth that I would like to bust. I have never seen anybody at any of these events who I could describe in any way as hating women. Men are angry at women at times, you know, and I think, honestly, justifiably so. It's justifiable to be angry at, like, when you ask, well, how do you convince women to give up these advantages? And it's like, because that would be fair,
but what,
right?
And
like advantages in family court? The assumption that the mother is the best parent?
But feminists would agree with you in this.
Except that they fight shared parenting bills.
I think it was you that said earlier, a lot of shared parenting bills are brought in by women.
They are brought in by women, but they're not brought in by feminists. You said you guys seem so anti-women. We're not anti-women. You know, and honestly, even when we talk about how men have specific masculine virtues, or, you know, like what I was talking about with, you know, there weren't any women swimming through the caves in Thailand rescuing those kids. Like, no, like, that's fine. That's fine, because women have other things that they do that they're good at that men aren't necessarily good at or don't want to do. And the whole idea is that we're complementarian, that we're together, and that we each have strengths and weaknesses, and we balance all of those things out. That is what we want. Like, we don't want men and women to be in competition with each other. That's just a recipe for unhappiness for everybody, especially children.
You said something in your speech about gallons of water that would be saved if families stayed together. What did you mean by that?
Well, when you have a divorce and you have a family now living in two separate households, instead of one, you use more water. You buy more refrigerators and washing machines.
Yeah,
and
I get that.
TVs, right?
That's not what I'm asking.
If we didn't have the divorce rate that we do, and if people were getting married at the age that they were in the 1970s and staying married, 30 billion gallons of water a year in the U.S. would be preserved, because we just would have a lower consumption rate, right?
But why would you stay in an unhappy marriage? You're not advocating for that, are you?
Unhappy, define unhappy, right? And how long does unhappy last? And can you work on it to make it less unhappy, or even maybe back to happy? They surveyed women, I forget how many, what the sample size was, but they asked them what they were going to do, then they followed them for 5 years and asked them how happy they were. And the women who decided to end their marriages were less happy than the ones who decided to work on it and stick it out.
It seems to be a really traditional, heteronormative view of the family.
But my family never decided what I was going to do with my life.
If I could clarify what I was trying to say there, is that, you know, the traditional family with the man being the head of it and the family staying together.
I haven't necessarily talked at all about...
But that is what it seems like to an outsider when we're talking about family staying together. And it's...
So you're saying that when women are the head of the family, families split apart... Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm trying to say...
Because that seems to be what... Men are the head of the family, families stay together.
No,
when women are the
like
head of the family, families break apart.
Well, no, it's normally when a family breaks apart, the woman becomes the head of the family. Not necessarily through choice, but through circumstances. But I suppose the point I was trying to ask you about is, within a wider sense, there seems to be like a kind of over-romanticizing of the past within this movement.
Not really, you know, like, so.
So you talked about your sons in the talk, that a lot of women come into this kind of advocacy after having sons. And you talked about the tricks that, the pitfalls that girls can destroy boys' life. What are they?
Oh, any kind of false allegation, for sure. Even if it doesn't really go anywhere other than rumor, it can destroy your social reputation as a boy. Paternity fraud? Going off birth control without telling him. How's that? I know one guy whose wife oopsed him for 4 out of their 5 kids.
And he told you and didn't tell? Sorry, she told
her sister, and her sister told. I think after the third time, he pretty much knew. But by then, he was stuck. It was cheaper to keep her. And every time he said he wanted a vasectomy, she said she'd get a divorce. Well, yeah, she's never worked the whole marriage. He's stuck paying alimony.
Right.
And she'd get custody. And oh my goodness, there's his entire life in ruins, in shatters. Honestly, you realize that women, like when men rape women, the legal system at least acknowledges that those women have been wronged, right? But when women rape men, the legal system is the instrument that they use to do it.
So you're one of the most high-profile women,
yes,
within the men's rights movement. More women are joining this movement.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think that they see something wrong, you know? Like, and part of the reason why I do this isn't because I want my sons to be okay. I want my daughter to be okay, too. And, like, the world that I am leaving them, I'm not going to be here forever. And they're going to inherit this complete pile, okay? And so I feel like I have an obligation to try and make things at least livable for them, so...
So that was Karen Strong. And as you've heard, this movement and the men and women who lead it are complex. Some of what they actually say chimes with feminist thinking, like when they talk about shared parental responsibilities. But other messages are just baffling, suggesting that women overall are more privileged than men, for example. And their obsession with how men have died for women in war.
You have been listening to The Backlash by 5050, Open Democracy's Gender and Sexuality section. You can find us on Twitter at 5050OD. Big thanks to the team at the International Men's Rights Conference this month, including Camille Majola, who is one of our Feminist Investigative Journalism Fellows. Also to Open Democracy's Adam Bahavsky, who did some great reporting with these MRAs.
We'll continue tracking the men's rights movement on 5050. And before you go, I wanted to draw your attention to some of our biggest stories from the past month.
We have 2 fantastic pieces that can also be read in Espanol for those of you who can speak and read Spanish. How Conscientious Objectors Threaten Women's Newly Won Abortion Rights in Latin America is an amazing piece by Diana Caraboni. Then also on sexual violence at the San Fermín running of the Bulls Festival in Pamplona, we have a special piece by Rocio Ross. So do check those 2 fantastic pieces out.
You can find those stories and the Backlash podcast at opendemocracy.net/5050. To hear Wings programs again, visit wingsradio.org or email wings@wings.org. Wings will include a link to the 1848 Women's Rights Convention Declaration of Sentiments with our program description. Thanks to all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.